ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय on the auspicious occasion of Ekadasi, the day before Vaman Dvadasi. Today we have fasted for half a day in consideration of Lord Vamana's appearance day tomorrow. We cannot observe the fast tomorrow because we have to break the Ekadasi fast at a certain time tomorrow morning. So I thought this evening to speak a little about Vamanadeva's appearance and how Srila Prabhupada considered his life to have followed certain principles enunciated in the section of Srimad Bhagavatam about Vamanadeva's appearance. Many of you know the history from the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Bali Maharaj, by the blessings of the Brahmanas, had been successful in his conquest of the universe, and he was occupying the planet of the King of Heaven. So the demigods, as usual in such situations, approached Lord Vishnu for help. And Lord Vishnu appeared as a small brahmachari named Vaman to cheat Bali Maharaj. Vaman knew that Bali Maharaj was charitably inclined to Brahmins. And so he approached him as a little Brahmin boy to beg charity. Bali Maharaj said, "Yes, whatever you want." And Vaman said, "I want only 3 paces of land." Bali replied, "You are very attractive, but you do not seem to be very intelligent. I could give you a whole planet, and you are asking for only 3 steps of land." And Vaman replied, "If I cannot be satisfied with 3 steps of land, I will not be satisfied even with the 3 worlds. So Bali Maharaj agreed. And Vamanadeva expanded himself, and with 2 steps he occupied the entire universe. Then he said to Bali Maharaj, "You have promised me 3 steps, but you have given me only 2 steps. You have not kept your word, and for this offense I shall arrest you and punish you and send you to hell." So Bali Maharaj accepted the Lord's actions. He was arrested, tied with the ropes of Vasuki, and humiliated, but he tolerated. And in the end, he said, "My Lord, you have accused me of not fulfilling my promise, but I have one possession left, which is my head, and you can place your third step on my head." Now, during the whole discussion between Bali Maharaj and Vasudev, Bali Maharaj said that you appear to be the friend of the demigods, but actually you are a greater friend of the demons. Because by giving material opulence to the demigods, you are just increasing their material illusion, their false prestige, and their material attachment. Whereas by depriving us of material opulence, you are actually showing us favor. Because when we are devoid of such opulence, we can come to our senses and realize our actual positions. And ultimately, Vamanadeva concurs. He says that to show special favor to people who are too blinded by material opulence and attachment, I show them special mercy by taking away their opulence. But in the end, he concludes that when a devotee is given material opulence for the service of the Lord and does not become bewildered by the opulence, he is the recipient of my greatest mercy. He said that when I give a devotee material opulence to use in the service of the Lord, and the devotee remains prideless and fully engaged in the Lord's service, he is the recipient of the greatest mercy. And here I will read one verse and purport, and then relate the whole discussion to Srila Prabhupada. This is Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 22, Text 27. Manastamba nimitanam janmadinam samantata sarvashreya pratipanam hantamuyannamatparah. Manastamba nimitanam janmadanim samantata sarvashreya pratipanam hantamuyannamatparah. Although aristocratic birth and other such opulences are impediments to advancement in devotional service, because they are causes of false prestige and pride, these opulences never disturb a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of God. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. When a devotee is fixed in his devotional service, there is no need for the Lord to deprive him of his material opulences. The Supreme Personality of Godhead never takes away material opulences achieved because of devotional service, although he sometimes takes away opulences achieved by pious activities. He does this to make a devotee prideless or put him in a better position in devotional service. And the next sentences, I believe, were written by Srila Prabhupada, thinking also of his own situation as he presented himself to us. If a special devotee is meant for preaching, but does not give up his family life or material opulences to take to the service of the Lord, The Lord surely takes away his material opulences and establishes him in devotional service. Thus the pure devotee becomes fully engaged in propagating Krishna consciousness. So in this history of Bali Maharaj, we see that the Lord gave him material opulence or allowed him to acquire material opulence. Then the Lord took it away from him. And then the Lord gave him even greater opulence than he had before. As Srila Prabhupada described his life's history to us, he was in Grihastha Ashram, and he had the idea to make money to use in the service of the Lord. And his Guru Maharaj would come to him in dreams and beckon him to come out of his family and follow him and preach Krishna consciousness fully. And as Srila Prabhupada describes, he would wake up in a state of horror, thinking, how can I leave my wife? How can I leave my children? How can I leave my home? And one astrologer had predicted that Srila Prabhupada would become the richest man in India. But then things started to go wrong with his business. And finally, the setbacks culminated once when Srila Prabhupada was away on business. And his servants ransacked his office and plundered his materials. And it was such a great blow to his business that he was unable to recover from the loss. And he thought of the verse from the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Yasyaham anugrinami harishye tadanam shanai. Lord Krishna says that when he's especially mercifully inclined to a devotee, he takes away all of his material opulence. And even within his family, his relationship with his wife was strained. Srila Prabhupada wanted to preach as a grihastha, but her mood was not so much to preach. She wanted to live a pious life as a Hindu family. And the crisis in his relationship with his wife came to a head when she pawned his treasured volumes of Srimad Bhagavatam in order to get money to buy tea biscuits. And Srila Prabhupada said to her in utmost seriousness, you will have to choose between me and tea. She thought he was joking, so she replied, well, I'll choose tea, of course. But when Srila Prabhupada heard her answer, a very firm resolution took place within his heart to leave the family. And he did. And for many years, as he described it, he loitered here and there. Actually, he was trying to preach, but without much success. And then he procured a free passage on a Scindia steamship to New York City. And again, after loitering here and there, struggling in New York City, eventually he was able to establish Krishna consciousness in New York City. But it was so hard and discouraging that Srila Prabhupada would periodically visit the Scindia Steam Navigation Company office to see when the next boat was going back to India. But fortunately for us and everyone, Srila Prabhupada never actually took the boat back. So here we can learn that a pure devotee also has emotions, also has feelings, also can feel discouraged. But what distinguishes a pure devotee from an ordinary person is that the pure devotee is fixed in his determination to serve Krishna. And then, as we know from Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, from various cinematic presentations, such as Your Ever Well Wisher and following Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada was blessed by Krishna with tremendous success, unprecedented success. And from a certain point of view, he was blessed with tremendous opulence. After serving Srila Prabhupada in Boston for a year and a half, Srila Prabhupada asked me to go to India and serve him in India. And after I had been in India for about a year, my parents came to Calcutta to try to get me back. So Srila Prabhupada was in his room, the same room in Rye Castle, 3 Albert Road, sitting at his low table, as usual, with some disciples. And after greeting my parents, he began to speak to them in a very intelligent way. He said that when he had his chemist shop or pharmacy in Allahabad, one of his customers was Motilal Nehru, the father of Jawaharlal Nehru, who later became the Prime Minister of India. And he said that Motilal Nehru complained to him about his son Jawaharlal, how useless he was, and how he wanted to offer him to Gandhiji's freedom movement just to get him out of the house. So in a very subtle and entertaining way, Srila Prabhupada was attacking my father's prejudices. Then he said that Jawaharlal Nehru was a made-in-England man. That in the shop, if Srila Prabhupada had the exact same medicine made in England and the exact same medicine made in India, Nehru would pay 20 times the price to get the medicine made in England. So again, Srila Prabhupada was challenging the typical Western prejudice that the West is superior and India is inferior. Then Srila Prabhupada said that one astrologer had predicted that he, Srila Prabhupada, would become the richest man in India. So again, in a very subtle and intelligent way, Srila Prabhupada was breaking my father's false attachments and sentiments to these so-called big people in the material world and making him attached to Srila Prabhupada. And actually, Srila Prabhupada did become wealthier, more opulent than the richest man in India. Jawaharlal Nehru had kept one British, when he was in England, he kept a British servant at great expense, because he wanted the prestige of having a British servant. But Srila Prabhupada had hundreds and thousands of British and American and European servants. And he didn't have to pay them. They were begging to work for free. So I will continue for their pleasure. Once we were in Srila Prabhupada's room in Bombay when we had just come to India and were staying with Kailash Saksaria. And Gurudas Prabhu began to praise another devotee named Dinanath Prabhu for his nice kirtans. And then Gurudas caught himself. He noticed that Srila Prabhupada's small Radha Krishna deities were there. And he said, oh, please forgive me, because it's an offense to praise someone in front of the deities. And Srila Prabhupada replied, Krishna is already glorified, but he takes more pleasure when he hears his devotees glorified. So, of course, that's not really the issue here. The issue is that their lordships are so attractive, it's hard to concentrate there. So what to do? Focus. So, back to Srila Prabhupada in Calcutta. So the richest family in India then was the Birla family. But how many homes did Mr. Birla have? 10? 20? 25? But Srila Prabhupada had eventually 108 homes all over the world. So he did, in fact, become the richest man in India. So my father was becoming very fascinated by Srila Prabhupada's talk. And eventually, though, he came to the point that he wanted me to come back to America. And he told Srila Prabhupada, I want to establish a trust for my son with $1 million in it. And Srila Prabhupada said, yes, you can do it. And my father said, but I want him to come to America to sign the documents. And Srila Prabhupada said, yes, you can send the documents, he can sign. Then my mother, seeing the way the discussion was going, began to cry. And she brought up her concern, which was that I was not healthy in India. And it's true, I had suffered somewhat in India. And back then, people had the idea, if you don't eat meat, you won't get enough protein. So she was concerned that I had lost weight, I wasn't getting enough protein, and so on. So to pacify her, Srila Prabhupada had his sister, Pishima, who happened to be there, distribute a place in my mother's hand and my father's hand, some sandesh that he had on his table as a prasad for guests and visitors. And then he said to her, these are made of cheese. They're very rich in protein. He said, both, rasgulla and sandesh. And then he turned to me, Srila Prabhupada, and said, you must eat 2 dozen rasgullas and sandesh every day. So then, my father rallied and said, why not just send Glenn back to America and he can practice Krishna consciousness there. Srila Prabhupada said, yes, he can go, it's up to him. Oh, I said, well, I would actually rather stay in India with Srila Prabhupada. So that was hard.
on my parents.
But Srila Prabhupada encouraged them. And he said, right now, it's pleasant in India, it's October, so let him stay with me for 6 months. And then when I go to the West in April, I will bring him with me. I said, that's an excellent idea. And I said, just see how intelligent Srila Prabhupada is. When India's pleasant in the winter and the West is cold, he stays in India. And then when India's hot in the summer and it's pleasant in the West, he goes to the West. And my father was actually becoming very enlivened by Srila Prabhupada. And he said, yes, he is intelligent. And Prabhupada said, your son is intelligent because he has understood my motive. And my father said to Prabhupada, no, actually, you are very intelligent. And Srila Prabhupada said, well, I guess I must be intelligent. Otherwise, how could I attract so many intelligent young men like your son? So it was sort of all settled. I would stay in India for 6 months with Srila Prabhupada, and then when he came to the West, I would accompany him. And Srila Prabhupada said he would take personal care of me while I was in India. And actually, after Calcutta, I went to Madras, and I was doing a lot of preaching day and night. It was one of the most enlivening periods of my Krishna consciousness. And I was, you know, living with different families in Madras and eating quite well. So Srila Prabhupada said I should take a picture of myself and send it to my parents. But anyway, back in the room in Calcutta, so it was all settled. And as my father and mother and I were leaving the room, my father expressed his great appreciation of Srila Prabhupada. He said, I'll say two things about your master. One, he's a brilliant organizer. And two, he really knows how to deal with people. And in my father's system of values, those are about the two highest compliments he could pay to anyone. So I stayed in India for more than 3 years. But then I actually did become quite ill. I had jaundice, and I just wasn't able to get better. And finally, Srila Prabhupada said, as long as Giriraj stays in Bombay, he won't be able to recover. So we made a plan that I would go back to America to recover my health. And before leaving, you know, I gathered up my strength, my physical strength, and came to see Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada said to Malkrishna Goswami, who was the GBC for India then, I'm sending Giriraj to Los Angeles, where Karanda will give him rasgullas, which you couldn't do. So, Hare Krishna. So now this is a very happy period. This is Prabhupada enjoying opulence. Of course, I mean, Srila Prabhupada was relishing Krishna consciousness. But in between, there was a crisis in ISKCON. Srila Prabhupada detected that his position as the founder Acharya was being minimized, and that devotees were being influenced by the Gaudiya Mutt in India, and they were developing some philosophical misconceptions. And it was an extremely painful time for Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada decided that he would leave America. That was not his plan. His plan was to stay in America and make Los Angeles his world headquarters. But Krishna had another plan. So I'm going to read a little from a conversation that Srila Prabhupada had with Kumar Krishna Goswami on June 17, 1977 in Vrindavan, just a few months before he left. Srila Prabhupada says, "In my horoscope there was written, after 70th year this man will go outside India and establish so many temples. I could not understand, what is this? I have to go outside India." Anyway, eventually he comes to this point where Prabhupada says that to Tamal Krishna Goswami that you were in Paris and I called you that I want to go back. There is some conspiracy. And Tamal Krishna says, actually at that time it was such a shock to you. The only medicine you wanted, we were massaging your heart and reading Krishna book, and you developed a very bad cough. And Prabhupada says, I do not wish to recall that. It was intolerable. Then these things were now brought. Otherwise, I did not want to come back to India. I would have stayed. I had made my headquarters in Los Angeles, and they made a conspiracy against me. Tamal Krishna, I never understood that. Prabhupada, that means Krishna desired. Otherwise, I had no plan to come back here to India. My plan was like that, but Krishna's plan was different. When I was coming back, I was speaking to Dwarkadish, the deities in Los Angeles. I do not know why. I came here to live. Why are you driving me away? While leaving Los Angeles, I was not happy. But Krishna had his plan. Krishna wanted that you left Vrindavan. I'll give you a better place in Vrindavan. You were retired in Vrindavan and I obliged you to leave. Now you come back. I'll give you a better place. So he has given me a temple 100 times better than Los Angeles. Anyway, if you read the story of Bali Maharaj, you'll see a lot of parallels. And Srila Prabhupada taught us by his example how to be surrendered to Krishna in every situation. But it doesn't mean he didn't have feelings. That he didn't feel sorry or unhappy or painful. He did. But he remained fixed in his determination to serve Krishna no matter what. That is his example to us. But if we can remain detached and humble, then we may not need Krishna to come and take away our material opulence and attachments. After the first pandal in Delhi, a young man from America came to visit Srila Prabhupada in a house where he was staying. And he was very inspired by Srila Prabhupada and the Pandal program. Srila Prabhupada, if Krishna consciousness spreads like this, and everyone becomes Krishna conscious, and people will learn to love each other, there'll be no more hatred or anger in the world, and everyone will be friends. And Srila Prabhupada said, no more anger? What's wrong with anger? Did someone tell you that anger was wrong? He said, Krishna spoke the whole Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna just to make him angry. Krishna wanted him to fight and kill. And how can you kill if you're not angry? He spoke the whole Bhagavad Gita just to make Arjuna angry. So then, an Indian man came. He was the father of Srila Prabhupada's Hindi translator, a nice boy named Ravi Gupta, was translating Srila Prabhupada's books in Hindi. And his father came to meet Srila Prabhupada in Delhi. So Prabhupada said, you know, how are you doing? Everything is fine. And Prabhupada said, have you given up smoking? And Mr. Gupta looked down. He said, no, Srila Prabhupada. And then he said, can't you just give me some special mercy? And Prabhupada said, special mercy? There is such a thing as special mercy. And then he quoted the verse, yasyaham anugrinami harishye tadanam shanai, in which Krishna says that when I want to give my special mercy to someone, the first thing I do is take away all of his wealth. So Srila Prabhupada said, yes, there is special mercy. Do you want some special mercy? Mr. Gupta said, no, no, Prabhupada. I'll do it myself. Special mercy. So, yeah, good instruction. So anyway, I'll just maybe conclude with one more story in relation to my parents and Srila Prabhupada. That when I actually did get sick with jaundice, and Srila Prabhupada said, as long as I stay in Bombay, I won't be able to recover, I ended up going to Los Angeles. And my parents came to meet me, and my sister also came. And later, my uncle, my father's brother, also came. So my sister came a little earlier, and I invited... Yeah, by then I was feeling a little better. I invited her to meet Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada spoke very nicely and simply to her, basically saying that if she stayed in the association of devotees, she would be protected. And then from the meeting with Srila Prabhupada, we went down into the temple room. And I was showing her the paintings of Krishna on the wall. And there was a very nice one, one of my favorites then, of Krishna and the cowherd boys herding the cows. And I was explaining to my sister that this is what life is like in the spiritual world. And this is Krishna, he's God, and like that. And suddenly she had this glimmer of realization. And she looked at me and said, has Prabhupada seen Krishna? And I said, yes. And she said, oh my God. So she stayed for a few days with some devotees in the community there. And she was getting very attracted to Krishna consciousness. But then my parents came and saw what was happening with her. It's like they were thinking, okay, now we try to get the son back, and in the meantime they were about to lose the daughter. So even though the whole idea was we'd all be reunited as a family, they had the idea to take her away on a little holiday to Palm Springs or somewhere in the L.A. vicinity. But then I think they were satisfied, you know, that. And I think in the end it was probably for the good that she didn't join them, because it would have really changed things. So they were all right. They came back, and I invited them to come on a morning walk with Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada was so charming. He said to my mother, Mrs. Teton, you look so young. And of course, she was very happy. And, you know, he was very skillful with my father, asking him different legal questions. And he genuinely had legal questions that he wanted answered. And my father gave him some advice about how to protect the properties, which my father, which Srila Prabhupada actually implemented. So at the end of the walk, we came to the parking lot where Srila Prabhupada's car was. And it was a Rolls Royce. So, Srila Prabhupada noticed my father was eyeing the Rolls Royce. So in a very humble and shy way, he said to my father, "My disciples got this for me." My father said, "No, no, you deserve it. You deserve it." And Srila Prabhupada said, "If you like, you can come and ride with me." My father said, "No, we have our rented car with us, so we'll go separately." So they were happy. They were happy with Srila Prabhupada. And then my uncle came from Chicago. They're all from Chicago. And I arranged for him to meet with Srila Prabhupada. And my uncle was he was a doctor, and he had very high ideals. And he was very disillusioned with the other doctors. We felt we were too interested in money. So for the whole time they were together, and it's hard for me to gather because like time stood still, but 20 minutes, a half hour, 40 minutes, I don't know. Srila Prabhupada just listened very patiently and sympathetically. In the whole meeting, Srila Prabhupada didn't say more than three sentences. He was just listening to my uncle with great sympathy. And at the end of the meeting, my uncle and I got up to leave. And my uncle said, "I've never met anyone like you." He said, "And that face, I've never seen a face like that. I must get a photo." So Srila Prabhupada, he could work magic on people. I mean, of course, it was his purity and sincerity. It was Shuddhasattva, it was pure spiritual energy. But it was more even than that. I think it was just his extremely merciful nature. He really loved people and cared for them. He saw beyond the body to the real person. And at the end of this, I'm not sure exactly at what stage, but later Prabhupada's servant told me that he commented to Srila Prabhupada that, "Srila Prabhupada, everyone likes you so much." And Srila Prabhupada said, "Yes, because I like everyone. Hare Krishna." So, thank you very much. Tomorrow we will be celebrating Radhastami. Jai Jai Shri Radhe.